If you did not pick up a copy of the study guide, then you can still get some. We have them over there. We are continuing with our survey of Bible history. And this morning, we're going to look at the story of the Tower of Babel. We're going to pick up there on our seat. Now, just again, for those of you who have not been with us in this study, what we're looking at here is some basic foundational information about the Bible. This survey is focusing on key people and events in the Bible that if you learn these things, you know these things, then this is like, as we've talked about, the skeleton on the body, okay? You learn these things, and then as you continue studying the Bible, then you start adding the meat and all the other stuff onto the skeleton. But this is a really good foundation of Bible knowledge for you. One of the most important things about this is these key people and events that we're focusing on in this study really help you in understanding better a lot of the other things that the Bible has to teach us. So in other words, if you don't understand these things, then as you're reading about other events, then some of them aren't going to make a whole lot of sense, and even if they make some sense, they're not going to have as much meaning and so forth for you without this basic understanding. So that's why we're spending the time doing this. Also, this is a great way to study with someone that doesn't have a lot of Bible knowledge. If you have opportunity to do a Bible study with someone, this is a thing that I use all the time, and I take it with people and use it to help them, again, the same thing, get a basic Bible knowledge of people and events. So that's what we're doing with this. So we look at the story of the Tower of Babel, and just real briefly summarize, what do we know about this particular story? What do you know? Okay, it's that basic thing here. This is where we find all the different languages in the world. If somebody asks a question, how come people talk different languages all over the world? Well, this is why, right here. What was the basic problem? What was happening here? Somebody summarize the story for me.
Build a tower to heaven. God got angry with it.
Okay. What had God instructed man to do after, you know, they came out of the ark and so forth? What were they instructed to do?
Be fruitful, multiply, build the earth.
Okay. Scatter all over the earth, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. But then we have these folks that decided they found this really nice valley. They said, well, instead of going everywhere, let's just plant ourselves right here. We'll build a tower to how far? To the heavens. And we will do what? Anybody recall? We'll make a name for ourselves. Okay? So, God saw what they were doing, and He says, if you look in chapter 11 of Genesis, and here's what I want to focus on with this. These two things. First is beginning of different languages, okay? And the second is a God-recognized formula for success, okay? There are four things here that God recognizes about what's taking place here that we can use as a God-recognized formula for success. I use it all the time in counseling with people when we talk about goal setting and trying to make plans and, you know, for the future and where am I going to go in my life and direction and so forth. I go back to this a lot of times. In fact, I have a sheet that I put together, a goal setting sheet, that includes this information on it to try to help people to learn how to set goals, okay, and accomplish those goals. And it's a great place to start because this is a God-recognized formula here. There are four things that God recognizes about what these folks are doing, okay? If we look here in verse 5, the Lord God came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, they all have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do and nothing that they purpose or propose to do will now be impossible for them. Then he says, verse 7, let us go down in there, confuse their language so they may not understand one another's speech. And that's where that part comes in. So, did you recognize the four things that God saw in what they were doing as a formula for success here? If you didn't recognize them, I have them listed on the paper here. Look at what he says here. If as one people, okay, if they're united, all right, then what? They're all speaking the same language. They're saying the same thing. Okay? Then what? They have a plan. Okay? And they begin to work. Those four things. God recognized formula for success. Okay? So, think about it this way. We have a church. You have a business, you have a family, you have whatever you're doing in life. If you got more than one person, okay, and you're trying to accomplish things, will this work? Will this apply? You see? How about a marriage? You see? If you're together, if you're united, that's the first thing. Okay? If as one people. Okay? Then what? You're saying the same thing. It won't work if one of you is wanting to do one thing and another's wanting to do another thing. If you got the kind of division in, you know, in what people are wanting to do and how they're wanting to get things done and so forth, it's not going to work. But if you're all on the same page, you say, everybody's saying the same thing. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to agree totally on every little detail. It just basically means that, hey, we're all moving in the same direction. We got the same ideas, and we're, you know, and so forth. Okay, we're united. We're saying the same thing. So what do we have? We got a plan. You know, when it comes to setting goals and accomplishing goals, if you don't make a plan, you're not typically not going to accomplish much. Okay, it's one of the things I teach in goal setting. You got to have a plan. Write it down. You see? And so, you know, they had a plan. Okay? And then what's the last thing you got to do?
Work.
You got to work. You got to start. You got to begin your work, you see? You know, you can have the best plans in the world. You see? Have it all, you know, written out and all the detail and so forth. But if you don't start working on it, how much are you going to get done? Not a thing. Not a thing. But you see, God looks down upon these folks and He recognizes these four things about what's happening. And what is His conclusion? If these things are happening, nothing will be impossible for them. That's why I refer to it as God's formula for success. You see? As He says, nothing will be impossible for you. So, if we will follow God's formula for success in things that we're trying to do, how successful do you think we'll be? Yeah. Won't be impossible for us at all. See? Especially, and as we've been talking about, you know, for quite some time, the whole topic of evangelism and outreach and trying to save souls, since that's what God has told us to do to begin with, how successful do you think we're going to be in that? You see? Since we're doing exactly what God told us to do. So when we think about the Tower of Babel, we focus on that. Those are the things that I just want you to keep in mind. That's what I want you to remember about the Tower of Babel. Okay? That's where we got all these different languages. And this is a God-recognized formula for success right here. Anybody have anything else to add to that? Before we move on to one of our main men.
A little discussion about why he came in and scattered them.
Okay.
We have a little discussion about
go ahead.
Well, I just want to hear others.
Oh, you want to hear from other people about, okay.
Why did he come down? If this is success, they come for success, why did he stop them?
Because they were disobedient to him. They were being disobedient. which is one of the things we have to remember is this: the if we follow this plan, even if we're disobedient to God, we'd still be successful. Okay, but it's not going to please God. Okay, all right. But the reason that all this happened was because they had not done what God told them to do. They were going against God. The statement there that they were going to build this tower, and what was it they wanted to do?
Make a name
for themselves. You see, you know, the whole concept here is I'm going to bring glory on man instead of on God. We're not going to do what God told us to do. We're going to do what we want to do and glorify ourselves. You see?
He wanted to scatter across the world.
Fill the earth. Subdue it. Yeah. Okay? Does that anybody have anything else on that? Wes?
His kids say, though, that they accomplished what they wanted to do. They made a name for themselves.
Yeah.
Not the way they wanted it, but they made a name for themselves that they're still going to be recognized for ages to come. You know, they'll always be remembered, but they'll always be remembered for the wrong thing.
Exactly. Okay. All right. Good point. Right? Okay, right.
What a company problem.
Right.
You understand why that happened. God's mind is not like our mind. He fixed all of it by making them all different. That's why all these different languages are about.
Right.
Because of that. And our mind is very, very, very interesting that God
And it's, you know, the idea here is that, you know, God does want us to be successful, but he wants us to be successful in obedience to him. You know, not in doing what we want to do. So that's an important part to remember with that. Okay? Anything else?
Yeah, well, God's command, just in case anyone doesn't know, Genesis 9, beginning in verse 1, it's right after the flood.
Right.
He tells Noah specifically, you know, fill the earth, increase in number, you know, basically spread out. And again, in verse 7, reiterates that.
Right.
You know? And the point is, they had this tower so they wouldn't get lost.
Exactly.
We'd get so far away, we wouldn't see the tower.
Right.
We'd
there's a place to come back to. And
come back to where we are going to make our name for ourselves.
Yep. Absolutely. Chuck? Absolutely, and that's a good point. You think about it, you know, the statement that Paul makes about the timing of God sending his son, and what was that timing all about? Anybody recall? He says, when the time had what? Had fully come or been fulfilled. In other words, it was by God's design when everything was, you know, the way it was supposed to be. And when you go back and you look in history, what was one of the most significant factors that allowed for the spread of the gospel the way that it did? What was the primary language of the Roman world at that time?
It
was Greek, and it was well known, you know, throughout a major part of the world at that time because of the Roman Empire, you see. And so when people traveled from one place to another, you know, being able to communicate was much easier, and so it was easier to spread the gospel, you know, in the world. You did not have that, you know, that language barrier at that particular time. So that's one of the things that folks look at as being a part of God's plan in accomplishing that particular task at that particular time. We still have the language barriers today, though, don't we?
Yeah.
Right?
It's funny we're talking about this. Just a few weeks, that they said that English was the hardest language.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
But it doesn't seem like that to us. But of course, when I was in the English class, yeah. But yeah.
It is. It's extremely hard to learn. In fact, if you talk to people from that, you know, from other countries having other languages, about them trying to learn English, they'll tell you it is a difficult language to learn. I think I've said this before. I really was afraid of trying to learn Russian, and I, you know, looking at that and going, man, I got to learn a whole new alphabet, you know. But Russian is, in my opinion, it's not nearly as difficult to learn as English. The problem with English is that we have so many rules to the language, and then we have a whole bunch of exceptions to those rules. And people looking at the language, you know, they're talking about, well, you know, this word means this over here, but over here it means this. And, you know, it's very confusing to people. Our brethren over in Ukraine that are trying to learn English, they'll tell you that it is tough. I don't know how you people talk this language. You know, it's very confusing. So it is. It's tough. It's a tough language to learn. And you know, just check the language scores in our schools and see how tough it is for our kids to learn it. It's their native tongue. Anyhow, let's talk about Abraham. Now, when we talk about people in the Bible, okay, here's one of the things I want you to remember, and just think about it this way. Do any of you remember the E.F. Hutton commercials? Okay, remember that? What was the E.F. Hutton commercial? What did it say?
When E.F. Hutton talks.
Yeah. When E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen, right? Okay. Well, I want you to think about that in terms of Abraham and two other people, okay? And the reason is because you've also heard the phraseology of people dropping names, okay? What does that mean when someone drops a name? Okay, to impress someone, right? You know, say, oh, do you know so-and-so, you know, whatever. You know, some people do that when they get stopped by troopers. You say, oh, do you know Trooper so-and-so? You know, he's a friend of mine, you know, hoping that they'll get off of their ticket. It doesn't work, by the way, okay? Anyway, we drop names, you see, in order to try to impress people. Well, there are three names in the Bible that are kind of like the E.F. Hutton of Bible history, okay? And the reason that I put it that way is because when we hear these names, and even more particularly, they were used in the New Testament a lot, especially in the Gospels, when Jesus was encountering people. Look at, there were certain arguments or discussions that he had with some of the teachers of the law about these three people, these three men. Okay, Abraham, of course, is one of them. And Abraham, as far as the Israelite people, was referred to as who?
Father.
Father. He was the father of the nation. Okay? And so he was referred to as Father Abraham. Okay? The second person that fits into this category, and we'll talk more about him in a little while, is Moses. Okay? Moses was known as the lawgiver. Okay? So when you're talking about the law and issues of the law, then you throw Moses' name out there, you see? Okay? And then the third person, anybody know who that is? David. And David was the king. You see? So you have Father Abraham, you have Moses the lawgiver, and you have David the king. Okay? Those three names are the E.F. Hutton of the Old Testament, okay? And so when people heard, when the Israelite people heard those names mentioned, and again, you see this in the New Testament oftentimes, when there is a conversation going on and someone would say, well, our father Abraham said so-and-so, you see, or David said this, or whatever it was, or Moses in the law commanded us to do so-and-so, the reason that they did that was to get people's attention because of the influence that these three men had on the people of their time. You see? So these are some vitally important people. So when we're talking about, we're talking about these people, the events and the people in terms of the Bible, those three names are three that you want to try to focus on and learn about a lot about. And so we're going to talk about Abraham first of all. He's referred to, as we mentioned a moment ago, Father Abraham. But where did Abraham get started from? Somebody summarize for us. Where do we first meet Abraham? Okay, in Ur of the Chaldees, right? But his name wasn't Abraham then. His name was Abram. Okay? And God called Abram out of his home country, the Ur of the Chaldees, and said, get thee up to a place that I will show you. Okay? You and your family and all of your possessions, he was to pack it all up and go to where God was sending him. And Moses didn't know where that place was, did he? Okay. He just went, didn't he? Okay. So attached with Abraham is, we find, the label of faith. Okay, Abraham was commended for his faith, not only by God, but in the 11th chapter of Hebrews, the writer there mentions a lot about Abraham and what God accomplished through him because of Abraham's faith. And that started at his very call when God first called him and said, Abram, got some place for you to go. Okay? And Abram didn't say, well, can you draw me a map and let me know where I'm going? Abraham just went. Okay? Now, he started out as Abram, but you see on your notes here, one of the significant things we want to keep in mind here is that God changed his name. Okay? He changed his name from Abram to Abraham, and as you see on your notes there, that name Abraham means father of many or father of many nations. Okay? And so that's why he is referred as that, because that's what his name means. Okay? He is Father Abraham or the father of many nations. Why that name? Why did God give him that name? Well, that has to do with the promise that God gave to Abraham, which is another important part of this story of Abraham. You see on there, the second line there, the promise. The promise entailed several different things, but one of the key points to that is that God's promise said, through you or your seed, all nations of the earth would be blessed. Okay? God basically told Abraham that he was going to make him his name great. Okay? Did God accomplish that? Okay? He said that he was going to make his lineage great. Okay? He told him he was going to be the father of many nations. Many nations would come from your seed. Okay? Did God accomplish that? Absolutely. Okay? And then he said, through you or through your seed, all nations of the earth will be blessed. Now, what significance does that have to anything that we read about in the New Testament? Okay, you're right, but make a better connection for me here. Okay, so Christ came, but what does that mean in terms of Abraham?
We're now family of the promise.
Okay, who was it that the lineage of Christ came through? Through Abraham. You see that, in other words, okay, that's obvious. Well, it may be to us, but it may not be to everybody. You see, that's what the significance of that promise is, that God said, through you or your seed, all nations of the earth would be blessed. And if you go back and you look through the lineage of Jesus, who, by his death on the cross and his burial and his resurrection, all nations of the earth were blessed, right? Because now we have opportunity for salvation. his lineage goes all the way back to Abraham. See, and that is the fulfillment. Jesus is the fulfillment of that promise that God made to Abraham. Does that make sense? Everybody understand that? Kim, you look confused there. Did I lose you? Okay. All right. So God makes this promise to Abraham. Through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. Now, again, there's another significant part of this that you have to understand. He says all nations. Okay? Why is that so significant to keep in mind?
It's just not the Hebrew or Jewish nation of the earth. Everybody will be under that umbrella.
Exactly, because we're going to see as we continue down here that Abraham's descendants eventually became the nation of Israel. Okay? And over the time, they kind of lost track of the promise that God had made that all nations of the earth would be blessed. And by the time Jesus came along, they were looking at the fulfillment of the promise as what? Our nation would be blessed, you see, through... And but the promise was that all nations, that included not just the Jews or the Israelites, but also the Gentiles, which I'm eternally grateful for, because just like most of you in here, as far as I'm concerned, everybody in here, I don't know of anybody who was born a Jew. If you are, that's fine too. You're converted to Christianity, that's great. But you see, that promise applies to you and I because we're all Gentiles. You see? And God fulfilled that promise that he made to Abraham in that way. And he did it through Jesus, who was a descendant of Abraham. Okay? Does that make sense? Did we clear up some of that for you, Kim? You see, so God makes this promise, and this is a major issue here. How are we doing on time? If somebody got to watch my time for me here, we'll be in here all morning. This is a major event and major person that you want to focus on, and because there's so much of the rest of the Bible that traces back to Abraham and this promise and some of these other events here. Okay, but this first part of it is the promise that God made: through you, all nations of the earth would be blessed. Okay, and that promise fulfilled in Jesus. And of course, the promise to all nations, including you and I today. Okay, it wasn't just for the Jews; it was also for the Gentiles, which is everybody else. Okay, now from there we move on to, just again in this particular category here, we move on to the sacrifice of Isaac. Okay, and. You know, here we are in Genesis, what is that? I think it's, is it 20? Is that where it is?
22.
No, 22, okay. So you see, we're kind of covering a lot of ground here, okay? And somebody give me just kind of a real quick summary of where's Isaac fit into all this picture here. God had promised Abraham that he was going to be what? The father of many nations. But there was one problem. He didn't have any children. So how is this going to happen? Okay. Abraham came up with a couple of solutions on his own, didn't he? Okay. The first solution that he came up with was what? No, not before. Not that one first. The first one was that his servant would be his heir. Okay? And God said, no, that's not what I have in mind. Your servant will not be your heir. Okay? And so, then what was the next solution to the problem? Okay? Abraham's wife Sarah says, I'll take my handmaiden Hagar and have a son by her. You see, and he will be the heir. And Abraham says, okay, you know, and so he goes, you know, and has relations with Hagar. She bears him a son whose name is Ishmael. Okay? But God says what? He's not going to be the one. See? When Abraham is how old? 99 years old, I think it says, when God tells him. He's 100, I think, when Isaac is actually born. Okay? And so Sarah is... How old is Sarah? I think she's 10 years younger, isn't she? I think Sarah, somebody check me on that. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're allowed to do that. But, you know, hey, she's old, okay? All right? You know, and God sends a messenger and says, hey, by this time next year, you're going to bear a son. And what does Sarah do? She laughs about it. Okay, yeah, right. Like, that's going to happen. I'm going to bear a son in my old age. And then, you know, a year later, she finds out, yeah, that came true. God promised and it happened. Okay? And this is the son that is born to Abraham and Sarah, whose name is Isaac. And this is where Isaac comes on the scene. Okay? Now, one of the other things, if you look at the last thing on there, we're going to kind of combine both of these discussions in here, is in all of this, God brings also to Abraham the covenant of circumcision. Okay? And so God commands Abraham to take his son Isaac and of course, all of the males within his household, and they are to be circumcised. And this becomes... the sign of the covenant that God has made with Abraham and with Abraham's descendants. Okay? And so the sign of circumcision was, you know, that was the seal, so to speak, on, you know, when you make a covenant with someone, there had to be something that said, okay, you know, yeah, we both agree to this and this is how it's going to be and we both accept the terms of this this covenant or contract, so to speak. And so circumcision was the sign that that God chose as the seal, so to speak, of this covenant. And that would become very significant. And see, this is another example as to why understanding this as it's happening here helps you to understand some of the things that we find, for instance, that Paul talks about in the New Testament when he writes about a circumcision not of the flesh, but rather a circumcision of the heart. You say, and you kind of go, well, what's that all about? Well, if you understand what circumcision was about back here, then it certainly makes more sense when you're reading what Paul says. So that's why, again, we focus on these kinds of things here, you see. And circumcision became the sign for legitimate Israelites. Okay? And that became, there's a whole lot of little things that are connected with that. We've talked about before the whole issue of cleanliness before God, whether someone was clean or unclean. Well, if you were an Israelite, okay, you were circumcised, then you were clean before God. If you were a Gentile, and in fact, oftentimes the Scriptures, and David, we find this, you know, with David different times, the Gentiles are referred to oftentimes as what? Unclean there. And look at the Philistines, the comments made there. David referred to them as what? Uncircumcised Philistines. Okay? That meant they were unclean people. You say, they weren't worthy before God at all. You say, so that's how significant this covenant of circumcision became to the Israelite people. All right, Ray?
Another thing you were mentioning that was so important that the circumcision, anyone that was not a Jew, and they took on the religion.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to be circumcised as well.
Exactly.
Because of that. And I had a question, why did they have to wait 8 days? I was at a gospel meeting. Okay. Cole Hall. The guy was preaching, and he made it. He said, they don't have to do it now because of medication, and there's a vitamin A.
Okay.
That works in the body. Men, young folks, men, young men can be circumcised. Don't have to wait anymore.
Okay.
Because of
the vitamins that are available. Okay.
Vitamin K. I did not know that.
Okay. I didn't either. That's news to me. I just kind of figure they do it when they're 8 years old, so that when they're 12, they won't remember that it was done to them. You know, it's like, you know, out of my mind. You know, this is a very significant issue for the Israelite people, this covenant of circumcision. And so when Isaac comes around, Abraham, has him circumcised or circumcises him, and he's, part of this. And so we're out of time this morning. Next week we're going to pick up with talking about the sacrifice of Isaac and what the significance of that is even to us today. All right? We just don't have enough time in this class. We just keep running out. So we'll pick up here.